Jason Klom, and this is the Comedy on Vinyl podcast. The year is 1988. The album is Have You Seen Me Lately? The artist is Sam Kennison, and my guest is Sandy Danto. Thank you for being here.
Thank
you. At your own place. Damn it,
for being at my place.
Of course.
Yeah.
And introducing me to your dog, who maybe hates me or maybe likes me.
No, he loves you. He's got a game he likes to play with anyone that comes over.
So, we have not done Kennison on the show before. It's to the extent that I've never heard a Sam Kennison album until today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. So it's weird when you haven't and you only know of him as this thing.
It's strange because he's the kind of comedian that it's, you know, whenever there's, in comedy or just in culture in general, anything that hits big, there's always an attempt to replicate not just the success, but just imitation.
Yeah.
And you just, he's the one comic there really isn't any of that with. And he's so polarizing.
Sure.
In a lot of ways, too, because I listen to this album, and I'm a huge Sam Kennison fan. My first job at the Comedy Store, when I moved to LA, I worked at National Lampoon, and I worked at the Comedy Store, and my job at the Comedy Store was to watch all the old videos in the archives and to digitize them.
Holy crap.
And most of them are garbage.
Sure.
Like, most of the people that Mitzi Shore chose to, immortalize were, maybe it's just context and it didn't hold up. But a lot of it was, hokey hook comic type stuff. But the stuff that definitely is timeless is Sam Kennison, just because the style is so funny and so few. You know, the material, listening to this album, a lot of the material's dated.
Sure.
A lot of it's very misogynist and homophobic. Not to say that that takes away from how funny he is, but it just, he couldn't get away with that now.
And sure.
The times were different. Culture was different.
Yeah.
Society was different. But the way he does comedy is just, would still be totally relevant to
him. Right. Yeah. You know, I like that you've laid that groundwork for it, because that makes perfect sense. And I feel like listening to it, my modern sensibilities, fucking hackles are going up, but I'm no, just listen for it. And you're right, that is what holds up the best, is just
the form.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, 100%. Not necessarily the content, but the way it's presented.
And there's some of the content, though, where I get what he's going for. You'd have to present it in a different way nowadays.
Right.
You know, even if it does come from maybe some of the homophobia is real, maybe some of the misogyny is real.
Well, it seemed too real because he does it in, asides.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
And it's like the bit about AIDS, it's no compassion for anybody.
No.
Yeah. Very hateful, but, you know, he came from such a dark place.
For sure.
And it's weird. I got this vibe from listening to the album that, in a way, as irrelevant as the negativity he has is in today's society. And I think that if he were around today, he wouldn't be talking about that kind of stuff.
You're probably right.
He would have changed his tune a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, and who knows? It would be weird to see a 60-year-old man up there screaming at the top of his lungs!
I know.
But who knows? That would maybe be even funnier. Who knows?
Yeah.
He's just maybe one of those guys that was meant to die young, because that could not be sustained.
Right.
But, you know, in a weird, sad way, if you took this guy and these attitudes and transplanted it from the late 80s to right now, he might be the mouthpiece of certain political presidential candidates.
That is true. You know? Yeah.
It's not far off from the sentiments of the Republican Party.
Right. That is true. But yeah, style. Okay. So I think you're right in that, in terms of style, nobody's tried to at least directly mimic this guy. I mean, but are there other comics, maybe even yourself, that you can see the influence more visibly than others? I don't know.
I think, yes, definitely. But no one, definitely, and some of my favorite comics, yes. But are these comics who are very well known? No.
You know? Right.
There's been nobody that's come out You know, I watched Joe Rogan last night, mm-hmm. and he has sort of definitely a Sam Kinison influence as far as uh-huh. what I see.
Okay.
Just as far as, like, he's talking about significant issues that are hard to talk about. Like, mm-hmm. I think listening to this album, it just doesn't seem like very many people were talking about what Sam Kinison's talking about.
Right, right.
And whether you agree with his opinion or attitude towards these different subjects, he still took something that was controversial and very heavy and made it funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, offensive to a lot.
For sure.
But still funny. And I think Joe Rogan kind of does that in his own way. He gets a little bit worked up, but he doesn't by any means, like, have the same sort of, like, heavy metal in spoken word vibe. Right. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I really can't think of anybody that really does, mm-hmm. you know?
No.
There's nobody that screams on stage.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Nobody.
When did you first hear this album?
Around the time I was starting work at the store, and I found, like, a bootleg tape of Sam Kinison and Robin Williams, maybe, like, 84 or 85,
uh-huh.
at the La Jolla Comedy Store. And then I just, like, dove into Sam's stuff, and then I'm close with Pauly Shore, and he was moving his office, and one of the things he was getting rid of was, like, a framed copy on vinyl of this album.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that was on my wall for a long time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, when I first heard it, I just thought, like, wow, this is crazy, this is wild, and this was like 2006, 2007, and it was before... I'm not saying that I ever agreed with what he said, but it was before this public consciousness of let's be a little bit more accepting. It's not that I never accepted gay people or women.
Sure.
You know, it's weird, man. We're in this age where like... guys on Facebook and Twitter are going out of their way to stand up for women's rights, and it's like you so outspokenly that you start to question like what the motives are.
Uh-huh.
And to me, and I just don't go out of my way to be like women should get equal pay, because it's just something that I always thought should be. It was sure. never something that I was just brought up with, that women and men are equal.
Sure. Yeah.
They're different. The thing that bothers me is like nobody acknowledges the differences. It's like the same with the race thing. It's like, well, it's the guys who are outspoken about women's rights online are the same guys who are like, well, I don't even see color.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's, it's like, well, there are differences. You have to sure. acknowledge them.
Sure.
But Sam Kinison doesn't acknowledge standing up for other people.
Yeah, yeah.
He just has his point of view, and he's like, I don't care. You people who like me are going to like me, and the people who don't, well, I love them because I want to be controversial.
Sure. Yeah. And I see what you're saying, actually, because it's I am one of those people you're talking about who puts that stuff online, but I also am not one of those people who says I don't see color. I'm one of those people who would like some accountability in terms of like comedy, only because I hate lazy comedy. And that's yeah. always been my problem. If you make a joke about color or race or sex or whatever the fuck, it's got to be good. Rather, you know
I totally
I mean?
Agree.
That's my problem.
You know what? They're the people that do shock humor, mm-hmm. and then they're just like, man, they just don't get it. Or they're just like they hear a buzzword and they turn off, and it's like, no, dude, your joke is just for shock humor. It's not
right.
clever. It's not making people think.
Such a moral push, isn't there, in this country, to try and get us to behave? Don't fucking drink and drive. God, they have made such a big fucking deal about this, haven't they? It didn't used to be such a big fucking deal. You had a few drinks, you drove home. Now you're a dick, you know? Now you're a fucking asshole. Child killer, child killer! Attempted manslaughter, attempted manslaughter! You know? You know, like you're going out to your car to go, well, I sure hope I slide into a family of six tonight. Woo! I bet you I can pass out before I'm in the stoplight. Yeah, that's not your fucking attitude. You're doing your best. You know, don't drink and fucking drive. Shit, we don't want to. I mean, you don't get fucked up so you can see how well you do on the test later, you know?
Right, yeah. And if you're not going to make people think, make that good too. You can do stupid.
Right, you can do, right? Yeah.
You know?
I do think people are generally too sensitive about any, like, I did comedy on Warped Tour this summer. And I have a joke where I say where I use a traditionally slanderous term towards gay people. But when we were growing up, that word was just like, I even say in my joke, I learned that word. It was like, it's a word that I find funny phonetically.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know if it's okay to say
on here. Sure. You can, because we're talking about it. We're breaking it down.
You know, the word fag. Phonetically, there's just something that has always been... You know what? I think it's offensive to call somebody a homo in a derogatory way, because you're saying being gay is bad. But just the word itself, fag, is just funny sounding, and it's like, bitch. I don't necessarily think of that word as like being derogatory towards women, you know, but I guess if you really break it down in the roots of it, then sure. You really want to take it that way.
Right.
But you know, we become desensitized and we lose the genesis of things, and it should just sort of detach itself from the origin.
I mean, I definitely agree in terms at least of like comedy. I think there's something to be said for like understanding where you are at the time, and you're sitting watching a show.
Yeah.
Maybe you're watching a character. If you don't like it, I think most people accept that if you don't like it, you're free to either leave, not listen, disagree, or whatever.
Right.
Not heckle. That's a no-no.
Right.
But equally no-no is don't sit there if you don't enjoy it. There's
right.
No point.
Well, what happened was, at Warped Tour, you're just in a tent and people are walking by decide to stay and watch or not. And I say, in the joke, I'm talking about people. I set it up by talking about people who put inspirational quotes at the bottom of their emails. And I'm like, don't quote Gandhi at the bottom of a bachelor party email, Brad, you fucking fag. And then it's supposed to like get like a... People, it's really divisive because people either laugh just hearing that word. Like a lot of comics use faggot as a punchline. And I think that's lazy.
Yeah.
But I use it to open up a conversation because I say... The thing about how it was acceptable to say. I learned that word when I was seven playing dodgeball.
Yeah,
I got hit in the head with two balls at once. Some other kid called me a fag. Neither of us knew what it meant. But looking back, it makes sense in context.
The point
I'm trying to make is the only reason words like that and words that are derogatory to any race or gender are hurtful is because there isn't a definitive slur for white straight guys. There just isn't.
Right.
There isn't.
That is true.
You cannot cut down a white... There's no word that somebody of color or a woman could call a white man who's straight that would get them fired.
Sure.
In the workplace.
Sure.
Rapist is the closest one.
Maybe. Yep.
And, you know, white privilege kind of makes it so that's not offensive. And it's just a joke about how we need a slur to just level the playing field and end this age of outrage. And then I'm like... You know, I'm not going to go the whole bit, but the point is, it's like, yeah, I use some offensive language, but it's like, if you put it in context, it's not offensive.
Of course, yeah.
Well, some 16-year-old girl walked by, heard me say fag, started screaming at me, walked away, reported me to the chairman of the tour, and I got a talking to for something totally taken out of context.
Sure.
And it was...
Yeah, that's my problem too. Is I don't like if you're going to complain about art, complain about it if you understand what was being said. I try to only complain if I know 100% what's going on. And I'm not going to complain to anybody's face. I'll be like, this is a lazy comic. I might do that if I know the person being lazy. But for the most part, like, I'll give you a minute. That joke, I get it. You know what I mean? I understand what you're going for. I do understand what you're talking about.
I'm like more offended by comics who do stereotypes, like. The kind of crowd work where it's like two guys sitting next to each other. It's like, oh, is this your date? What are you guys, gay? It's like,
right.
Okay, like, what are you...
Yeah, what are you saying?
Right. I'm not offended by it on a level of you're being homophobic. Sure. I'm offended on a comedic level.
Yeah, 100%. Because, I mean, I think we, except for the most part, most comics are sensitive, artistic type people anyway. So the idea that most of these comics are going to be homophobic assholes is not likely. Not likely.
But it's crazy because Sam Kinison just could have only existed in the time period that he did.
Yeah.
And we live in this age where, like, on one side of the political coin, there's this movement to shut down free speech or limit it. Mm. And then on the other side, it's like they're fighting for their right to have free speech in air quotes, but really just be able to say as hateful of things as they want to say. Yeah. And then limit the other side's free speech as to whether or not they could say speaking out against the hateful stuff that they say.
Right. Yeah.
So it's just this whole vortex of fucking futile argument.
Yeah.
Over like nothing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, a mutual respect would be helpful to begin with. You know what I mean? It's hard. It's very hard. And like I said, perspective is everything in terms of like knowing that you're at a show.
Right. Well, there's no, there's no intellectual discourse about it.
No.
About the mic. As smart as any college student might be or think that they are, at that level in your life, you just don't have the life experience to speak on and really matter with the microaggression thing. It's you can't take all the N-words out of Huck Finn. Like, right, you can't rewrite it. That's the thing I liked about listening to this album. As offensive as, on a gut level, you might hear some of the things he says, you're listening to a part of history that's different, and that's why it's interesting.
Sure.
And to try to rewrite history and take all the offensive parts out of it is just so patently ridiculous.
It
makes me side with the part of the political arena that I just don't agree with.
Right. You know what kind of blew my mind though? I was looking at it, and I'm obviously looking on Wikipedia just to, so I knew a little bit about Kinison, just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, he's fucking 34 on this album? That's what blew my mind.
Yeah.
He's 34. In my brain, he's always at least 50, but he only got to 38. That's the weird thing for me. It's just
the same thing for me with Belushi is that he only lived to 33, but
yeah.
I mean, I grew up, I was a child watching him, and so he was always just mythically way older to me.
Yeah.
And now I'm 32, and I'm like, and not close to the level. You know, I always idolized him because people tell me I look like him.
Yeah.
And now I'm a year away from where he was when he died and, like, was past his prime. And
yeah.
Just like, the fuck am I doing with myself? What have I done?
Okay, so you hear this out. I have to imagine knowing, like, the shit that I liked when I... Well, no. So you're a bit older, though, when you first listened to this. I mean, had anybody pointed you to Kinison before this? Like, or thought?
When I got to the Comedy Store, I mean, he was idolized.
Okay.
Maybe to a lesser extent now. I mean, 10 years have passed, which is crazy to think about. But when I got to the Comedy Store, I mean, there are still guys there that I talk to on a regular basis who were there when he was there.
Yeah.
And Marin, you know, if you listen to WTF or have read any of his books, you know, he has a famous chapter of his life that where he was hanging out with Sam Kinison.
Really?
And, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's
and,
a bad influence.
Yeah. But yeah, when I first got there, everybody was like, Kinison is the best, you know, this and that. And so definitely steered me in that direction. And I really do think, you know, I think that he thought he was more of a prophet and he proselytized a little bit more for now my more mature comedic taste, but just as a performer and a presence and some of his jokes and his style, I mean, just second to none.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I think the Preacher influence is obvious. What I would like to know more about, and I don't know how much you know, but like, I would like to know where his perspective comes from, because like, I think a lot of this is the 80s.
Of course. You know? And that, you know, like being anti-gay or at least like joking around about AIDS and like the homophobic sentiment. I think in the 80s, even if you That's the thing that really bugs me about the microaggression and the outrage stuff is that, like, you can joke with a certain attitude that seems anti this person or anti that person, but at the end of the day, they're just jokes.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, that was the thing. Listening to this, it's like, I don't think that if he was with a gay, I know for a fact that there were gay people, gay comics around at the Comedy Store back then. That
sure.
He, you know, it's not like he shunned these people.
Sure. 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 Yeah.
But
I mean, there is a lot in there that is clearly this guttural expression of other people's fears.
Right. Yes.
And that's a big part of
which
it.
Which is a lot of what Donald Trump is right now. Definitely. That's why I think that Sam Kinison from the 80s, if he was trans, if it was like a Bill and Ted situation, it would be just that much crazier.
Oh, Jesus, you know? It's sad. It's gross. It's a pain in the ass. You know, your dick doesn't understand what the fuck is going on. It's like, what are we doing? Robbing a fucking bank? What's the ski mask about, boss, huh? What, is she that ugly? Are we fucking a guy? What's going on here? What don't you want me to see, boss? What are you doing, man? Yeah, the dick's totally thrown off, you know. And women don't understand, you have to maintain an erection while you put this fucking balloon over the head of your fucking dick. That's a lot of fun. Nothing keeps me stiffer than... They're a pain in the fucking ass. They remind me, you feel like you just ate a Kentucky Fried Chicken snack pack. You know, it's like a little wet nap thing they have in there that you pull out.
In 2012, Stolen Dress Entertainment brought you the feature-length mockumentary Looking Forward, the story of one 24-year-old man's presidential campaign, 12 years in advance of eligibility, and 16 years in advance of a good slogan. Now, in 2016, in anticipation of an historic election season, Stolen Dress Entertainment brings you the sequel, Looking Forward, 2016. For the next 9 months, 14 of the story's central characters will present video blogs, bringing you their side of the story. On the day following the election in November, the strangest, most unorthodox film sequel in history will be completed. Visit lookingforwardmovie.com to see every video as it is posted and to watch the original film for free. Subscribe to the channels you like, retweet the characters, and share your thoughts on the Looking Forward page on Facebook. Looking Forward 2016. One campaign in pieces.
I do think that the sentiment of the 80s was just like... if you watch any 90s comedy movie, mm-hmm. there's at least one or two jokes mm-hmm. where they're calling somebody gay in a derogatory way.
I think even Bill and Ted, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
I think they use the word fag in Bill and Ted, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but not... I mean, not even just fag. Just like... And I'm not gay, but I have a lot of empathy for people mm-hmm. and sympathy. And, mm-hmm. you know, I just... find it much more offensive. It's like, all right, I'm Jewish, so it's much more offensive to be called a Jew in a derogatory way because mm-hmm. you're just dismissing the whole, like, mm-hmm. the entirety of what it is or the existence of it instead of being called a kike, because at least that's, like, a word that some idiot learned was mean, and it's like, you don't hear it that often, so it's, like, kind of funny to hear.
Mm-hmm.
That's but, like, it's, like, the difference between, like, using the N-word and, like, being like, oh, that's so fucking black of you. And it's like, well...
Yeah, right.
That's not... That's, like, way worse than just... You're just, like, being totally dismissive and anti yeah. this whole thing.
Yeah, you know, I do appreciate that perspective that, like, if you kind of... You have this code where, oh, if somebody uses this word, I know they're a fucking moron.
Right.
I can dismiss them.
Right.
This other
it's context, you know?
Yeah.
But I think there... I have a certain proclivity towards those words just because the taboo of... I mean...
Sure.
In my own context, like, those words are funny to me just because of how taboo they are.
Sure.
And I understand that they're not okay to say, mm-hmm. but there's just, if you can find a clever way to slip them into something where it's like people who are in the moment with you can understand the context, that much more power.
Sure. Yeah, but at least you appreciate that you You know that there's a time and a place. It's probably usually among other comedians.
Right, yes, exactly.
You know, there's
because especially to us, we're so desensitized to everything that you kind of need that extra push.
No, and I also appreciate that. There's, where is the line? Okay, one of the more creepy things in it is that he just like, hey, everybody should be able to drink and drive, and then he's killed by a drunk driver. That was one of the things that kind of like...
Yeah, I mean, if that doesn't encapsulate the whole... context of everything he says in a nutshell.
Yes. Yeah.
How else do you expect us to get home?
Right. And I mean, here's the thing. Like, it's... I think the reason this is challenging even for me, like, and I will take perspective on anything. I'll listen to some old shit from the 20s that's blatantly racist and see if I can break it down and see what's good in there, right? The big challenge is those kinds of things where, like, tongue is planted in cheek for some of it, and then the rest of it's like, wait a minute, but he's still insisting. It's such a challenging persona. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It seems like tongue in cheek, and then it seems like, oh no, maybe not.
I think the problem is where the people who listen to it at take it at face value,
sure,
and go on with this, like you mentioned the movies from the 20s. That are, like, so overtly racist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you look back at those, and you put it into perspective, it's, like, kind of funny to see how over the top it is. You know what I mean?
100%.
It's like when you watch a movie that's trying to be dramatic, and it's not, and it's just funny. But it's dangerous because that's what set the precedent for what came next and what came next after
definitely.
To where we are now in an era where we're trying to erase that completely,
which
is dangerous.
Yes.
But with this, you know, how many people are going back and listening to this album?
Not a lot.
And if they are, they're just like, whoa, times were different back then.
Yeah.
And it's not, comedy is different because it's such a progressive art form. It's like, each individual person who's doing it has their own agenda and their own spirit that they're trying to project through whatever their material is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it, you know, not only is it the 80s,
mm-hmm,
and every comedy movie made fun of gay people,
sure,
and disparaged. I mean, if you watch any 80s or 90s, like, slapstick comedy, half the jokes are literally sexual assaults.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
women,
yeah,
getting their tops pulled off 100%, and things like that. 100%. It's like in Porky's when they cut a hole in the girl's shower.
Yeah,
or,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
Revenge of the Nerds when they rig up the cameras. It's like, these are things that are literally... There are probably comedy movies where people are doing Bill Cosby's, and it's like...
Sure. Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, that's a funny, goofy gag in the 80s, and today it's taken super seriously as rape, as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But it's context. But I think what also lends to the whole sentiment of it being outdated is that, like, he grew up in the South, he was, mm-hmm, a preacher,
yep,
very... But there are also things that he says where it's like, he has a firm knowledge of the Bible. I mean, like...
Yes, yeah.
He,
yeah,
knows that... It's not like he's coming from a place where it's like, the Bible says gay people are bad. He's just, like, sort of playing around with the consensus of the zeitgeist towards,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
women and gay,
sure,
people. And
sure. The one line, I found it, I wrote it down. He at one point he's talking about the Pope, and he says, the Pope's tough on gays. I mean, I'm tough on him, but I'm a comedian. Like, that was the part that's like, oh,
right,
shit, yeah.
Right.
You know,
and there's another thing that he says about the Pope where he's like, I can't remember what it was, but it was like, he was like calling the Pope out for a misrepresentation of something in the Bible, and
yes,
it's like,
yeah,
this is not what the Bible says, dude.
Right.
It's like, you're just taking it up. Like, did you read that part?
Right.
And that's the thing that showed me, like, all right, this guy is just kind of like, well, these are the tropes that people know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and I'm just gonna play on that.
Sure.
And it's gonna be edgy and whatever, but. It's weird to think that in that time it would have been way edgier to be pro-gay. you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
It's insane to think. It's also funny that he's, like, using the Pope in a pornographic sense, too.
Yes.
Which would still be offensive today, which I loved about
that. Oh, yeah,
it
would. That is absolutely true. Although, maybe this Pope would be cool with it. It's hard for me to tell.
But that was a thing that sort of... That leveled the playing field to me, because he left this religion and it's part of who he is. Mm-hmm. It's part of what made him into who he is. And he's making, nothing's off limits. You know what I mean?
Sure.
He is making fun of and making horribly offensive jokes at the expense of women and gay mm-hmm. people, but also at the Pope and his own religion. And mm-hmm. so it's like, at least the playing field is leveled yes. in that matter.
Sure, sure, sure. Did you, after listening to this one, did you go and listen to his other stuff? Or, like, how did you...
I have it on cue, but I haven't really listened to... I mean, I have listened to it before. Mm-hmm. His later stuff just kind of, like... It still has some merit, but it's not... You know, you could tell that the drugs are more mm-hmm. a part of his life than the art.
Mm-hmm.
But he's still, I mean, just such an electric performer.
Yeah.
That, like, hearing the cadence change... You know, it's like... You get in front of an audience sometimes, and they're not listening to your jokes. They're just waiting to be prompted to laugh with a cadence change.
Right.
Of your delivery. And I don't think there's anyone better at making that happen, void of whatever he's saying, than
Kiss. Yo, no, I mean, that is one thing I noticed, too. So I had to listen to it with that perspective. I'm like... This is an audience that wants, they don't care. Everything is going to be funny to them. Yeah. And they cheer like fucking mad people in this.
Yeah.
They go nuts.
It's like a rock star carnival environment.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that was interesting to me was that, you know, he's very misogynist. Mm-hmm. But it comes from a place of being, of like, personal anguish and...
That is
like
clear.
A vendetta. But, you know, he doesn't really, it's not like... I've been hurt. This woman's a bitch. It was like, I've been hurt. All women are bitches.
Yes. Yeah. And the weird juxtaposition is like, oh, also, you have to take care of... Like, there are some, like, pro-women things hidden in this
massive
hatred.
It's very loaded. It's very... It's crazy. And it's crazy just how... I mean, how timely it was that... I mean, how, just in the context of that era, how... Mm-hmm. It could never work today, but at the same time, it just seems crazy that was being said in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
some of the stuff. And even the stuff about, like, trying to get women to do anal.
Yeah, right.
It's
right,
like,
right.
That's still very... You know, that joke, I think, has been done so many times.
That's, I was actually thinking that listening to it. I'm like, how many people have stolen this exact bit?
Yeah.
To some degree.
It was funny, though, man. She came up to me one night, she goes, you know, would you mind if I brought another woman into our bed? Now, what fucking guy is going to mind, huh? What guy is going to throw a fucking shit fit over that, huh? What? I can't believe this! Oh, this is the end! What, are you saying I'm not enough for you? Are you a sick little fucking tramp? Yeah, sure, yeah. Every guy knows, like, well, honey, if that's what you want, if it'll make you happy. If watching me fuck one of your friends in front of you will get you off, then darling, I love you. That's just part of that marriage vow, you know. Through sickness and health, and this is pretty sick, and I'll do it for you because I love you. Come on, how many guys right now? How many guys in this audience, if your girlfriend came to you, if your wife came to you and said, listen, I'm a little bored with the rut we're in sexually. Would you mind if I brought a friend in and we had a sexual, nasty little adventure like that? How many guys would say, honey, I love you enough? You mean enough to me, darling, that I'm going to do it! Your sex puppet, I'm gonna be your fucking dick, and I won't enjoy it. I'll look at you the whole time and I won't enjoy it, I promise. How many guys would do that right now? Listen to it. How many guys? Oh, that's love. I didn't expect that kind of response. I expected two or three guys. I didn't expect 90% of the guys to go, god damn it, I love her that much, Sam.
It's crazy that, you know, we live in this internet era where it's very easy to get caught stealing material.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also so easy because to not get caught, because there's so much out there
mm-hmm.
that nobody is listening to anymore. Because comedy really is like a what have you done for me lately sort of...
No, it's absolutely true. And I think it's not exclusively, but it's a very American perspective. We've talked about this before. It's like you can have the greatest album of all time, but if your next album sucks, or you continue to suck, like, people don't really kind of remember the old shit as well.
Right.
You know, I mean, in England, there is a tradition in terms of comedy where, like, they'll hold on to these people until it turns out they molested a bunch of kids, which, by the way, happened. Like, there's this one guy who's very famous. I heard about that. Yeah, very famous for taking care of kids and being a wonderful, funny guy, and then he was great. He didn't have to continue making hits or being great, but because he did this thing once, he was good to go until, of course, he died, and then a bunch of shit came out.
Jesus.
But yeah.
I heard about that.
But, you know, over here, you're right. Like, if unless every album's a hit, like, people are going to forget you. Except for maybe Eddie Murphy, but he kept making movies.
But you know what? If you watch his specials, yeah. Raw and Delirious,
mm-hmm.
So extremely homophobic, transphobic, misogynistic, like, unironically.
Oh, yeah.
Just like, with Kittison, there's, you feel and you understand the motivation,
mm-hmm.
at least behind the misogynistic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just part of the attitude of society than the homophobic stuff. It's sad, but that's just how it was.
Sure.
With Eddie Murphy, I mean, you go back and watch that, and it's just like, he as a performer is also incredible, but I mean, what he's saying is just so fucking... If anyone tried to do that now...
Oh, yeah.
They would be banished from the entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, that's the shit that at the very... And by the way, for a guy who obviously got caught with a transsexual hooker at one point, too, if I'm not mistaken. So, you know, it's... that his came from a place of fear. Like, where I think most of the most of Kinnison's stuff comes from... It's clearly fear of rejection by women... And fear of not being in control of who you are because he's afraid of gay people.
Just like, you know, the stories I've heard mm-hmm. from people who had personal connections to him
mm-hmm.
was just that he was motivated by fear and insecurity. Mm-hmm. And he took that to the extreme.
Yeah.
You know? That he just... Everything was a power play, and he's very smart and manipulative, and he just, everything he did was to keep him at the level he was at, despite, you know, whether he deserved to be or not.
Yeah.
He's like a scary guy. Those are the people that, when they're in power, they're the second scariest to just the straight up sociopaths.
Yeah.
You know, you could tell that he wasn't, because he just had all these fears and emotion, like, crazy emotional guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But was afraid of feeling those feelings. And
for
so,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what's funny? It's like this, I was going to compare him to, like, a wolf, because, like, you only scream when you're afraid. You scream to fend off other people, but it's because you're afraid. And it's perfect that when I walked into your door, your tiny, adorable dog just growled the fuck at me and wanted to chew me up. And then, of course, I pet him, and he's like, oh, lick, lick, lick.
You know what? That's what he is. He does that. I mean, it's just, I think it's a territory thing, but
I
think more so it's like, all right, if I make this person think I don't like them, they'll pet me to win me over.
100%. 100%.
Which is what a lot of guys' games are, approach to women, you know?
Yeah.
I've never been one of those people.
Sure.
But, you know, I never saw how that worked until I had a dog. I was like, oh, but you have to be cute for it to work.
So you discovered Kinnison kind of late. Like, what were your early comedy influences as a kid?
Growing up, all my comedy influences were sketch.
Yeah.
Belushi, Farley, Adam Sandler. I mean, Adam Sandler's albums growing up.
Sure.
Norm MacDonald. Mm-hmm. Actually, all right. The Critic was a huge influence.
Yeah.
The movie Dirty Work was a huge influence.
Uh-huh.
All that, like, SNL era stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Yeah.
The Simpsons.
Did you listen to a lot of comedy albums or no?
Yeah.
I mean,
like, I listened to Sandler's comedy albums a lot. Weird Al.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what else. I didn't really get into stand-up until end of high school, college.
Okay.
There was some that I liked.
Mm-hmm.
Seinfeld, and I really liked, it's weird, I really liked Stephen Wright a lot.
Yeah.
But then somebody played Mitch Hedberg for me, and I was like, I hate this. And then I listened to it again once I started comedy, and I was like, this is so good.
Yeah.
This is so good. But growing up, mostly, I really liked the dry humor of, like, Norm MacDonald, mm-hmm. Dennis Miller, and who else? John Lovitz.
Mm-hmm, sure.
But I love... I mean, Chris Farley, probably my greatest comedic influence. Just because when I was growing up, I could still do it, but I did a spot-on impression of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of like the sweetheart version of Kinison, you know?
Yeah.
He did sort of a similar shtick, but just without all the hate.
Right. You know? Right.
But that got me out of ever getting picked on, because anytime kids would start to be mean to me, I'd be like, I don't think you want to do that. I'm retarded. No yelling on the bus! And then I made friends with all literally the worst people who picked on other kids. And
but at least you didn't get your own ass beat.
Yeah,
that's good.
Exactly.
That's solid. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And then coming up through the Comedy Store, people... I got in there through Pauly Shore. I had a friend introduce me to him, and I started interning for him. Then I asked him to get me a job there. And I didn't get... I got in there sort of in a nepotistic way, and people there do not appreciate that.
Uh-huh.
And so I had to win everybody over. And I eventually did, but part of that was like I do a spot-on Pauly impression, and that's sort of my adult version of Chris Farley. Because I would just... Pauly, you know, he's a great guy, but it's his mom's club, and sure. He grew up a rich kid and getting whatever he wants, so he walks around that place and he just expects all the employees to, like, bow at his every whim.
Sure,
and so
sure.
I would just go up to people that... and ingratiate myself by being Pauly to them. Be like, dude, go get me a club soda with a lemon wedge. And they'd be like, that's exactly what he says to me. And, you know, that's how...
Oh, shit.
I didn't get picked on there.
Yeah. Holy fuck, I love it. Because I want to make sure that we get to your project that's coming up.
Yeah. It's live now.
Yeah, good. So, before we do that, though, this album, this is a hard sell. At the end of every episode, I'm like... Why would you recommend listening to this album if you haven't heard Kinison? But why recommend listening to it? Because it is a hard sell.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is.
Okay.
Because no matter what your sensitivities are or whatever your political affiliations are, I think there's something interesting just about going back and seeing what is going on now in our culture and our society, what the climate is. And then going back and listening to that and just seeing how different it was and how it's crazy to think that censorship was a huge issue around this time around music.
Yeah.
Like Frank Zappa and how, I mean, Frank Zappa was outspoken about being against censorship in music, but he was sort of like, in a way, sticking up for a very racist witch hunt.
Uh-huh.
You know, because, I mean, let's be honest. The parental advisory sticker pretty much exclusively was put on rap albums.
Yeah.
You know? And it's crazy that censorship was such a big thing politically around this time that this album came out.
Yeah.
And that comedy just wasn't at all. And now comedy really is.
Yeah.
It's very much bandied about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think... You should go back and listen to this just to see how much things have changed,
mm-hmm.
but how also how much of a standout comedian this guy was back then.
Mm-hmm.
How he can make you laugh at things you totally disagree with and are offended by.
Sure. Just based on performance alone.
Yeah.
And energy. There's no doubt energy is throughout this whole fucking album.
Yeah. And you know what else we failed to bring up? Just like how... Yeah. He screams and it's very theatrical, but how he manages to make it feel so conversational and natural. The mm-hmm. way he goes in and out of the screaming, it's like how I would be telling a story to a friend that I was like really jazzed about when I came home. Yeah. He just brings to the stage this like, and I'm sure it was like a huge theater or like an arena or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's just like talking the way you and I are, and then just at a natural point in the story will scream his punchline, and it's hilarious, and just goes on with a regular conversation. It's really interesting.
He also does pretty interesting voice work too. Normal voice, you wouldn't expect him to be able to do like the higher pitch shit that he does, but they're pretty great.
You know what? I take it. You were talking about lazy comedy and like the difference between being offended on the level of like hate.
Mm-hmm.
And laziness, and there are a lot of comics, male comics, that do just offensive on many levels impressions of women, just like it being a lazy impression or it just being an offensive
mm-hmm.
impression. But his impression of women is just so funny.
Yeah.
Because it's this ridiculous caricature voice,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah. And I think it expresses kind of the same thing that Scream does. It is supposed to be one extreme. Okay, so... What is, you have a Kickstarter.
Yep.
And tell me about it and tell me when it ends so that we know when to get people out there.
So Netflix sort of ushered in this era of the comedy special taking on a new meaning
mm-hmm.
and new significance, at least within the comedy world. And just having a new outlet for us to be able to have specials
mm-hmm.
that are seen by a lot more people. And the issue I take with them is that they're all sort of either the same or dishonest.
Mm-hmm.
It's all just like a comedian at either a theater or a club. And there are a lot of club comedians that do their specials in theaters. And it's like, why?
Mm-hmm.
Just do it at a club where you're comfortable or your natural setting. You know? Or where like the room's so big that they have to pay the audience or like give away free tickets. And it's like... That, and it's just like, it's been done a million times. And I know part of the beauty and essence of the art form of stand-up comedy is that it's so basic. It's a person with a microphone and an audience.
Sure, sure.
But I want to do a special that is unprecedented, and you might think it's a gimmick, but here's what it is. I want to do a special where I take a yacht out of the water and I trail it across the country on a semi-truck. And I do shows on the yacht, and I treat the yacht as if it's a traveling venue / tour bus. And I do the shows on the yacht, and I shoot my special on a yacht that's on an 18-wheeler on dry land in the middle of nowhere or in Walmart parking lots. And I want to ride a jet ski in a pool on the yacht that's on dry land. So I want to do a special on a jet ski, in a pool, on a yacht, that's on an 18-wheeler, on dry land.
I love it.
And I'm trying to raise $10,000, which definitely isn't enough. But
right.
Plan to go to sponsors, to see. You know, my ultimate vision of this
mm-hmm.
is that I get a huge yacht, as big as that's legally allowed to be transported.
Sure.
And it's covered in corporate logos like a NASCAR.
Of course, of course.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just want this to be the ultimate American experience. Maybe so American that it should take place in Dubai.
So when does it end and where can they find it? Well, what's
so the search for? My campaign is over on April 24th, 2016.
All right.
Because, you know, this podcast goes up and it's up forever.
Right, right, right.
So make sure if you're going to donate, and please donate, even just $2. That's, if I get enough $2 donations, I can do this and you can all come to the show.
Mm-hmm.
You could just go to my website, sandydanto.com, or my Twitter, @sandydanto, Facebook, whatever. Or just Google Kickstarter Sandy Danto. The name of it is Jet Ski Hot Tub Road Trip on a Yacht. And... I think that, you know what, I want to move the art form of the stand-up special to another place,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that if I can do this, people will see that and they'll be like, I could do anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Love it. I love it. Well, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for making it possible for me to do this.
Of course, of course. Thank you for letting me into your home.
Of course, anytime.
So, guys, please, go donate to the Kickstarter, follow them on Twitter, and thank you for listening. And as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl, Twitter @ComedyOnVinyl, and find everything else at ComedyOnVinyl.com.